The next morning, the men who worked for Clyde Mallory got busy early, hitching up the teams and mules to the wagons. Corliss Hart spotted the activity and walked out of the stockade to talk to Mallory, who was standing near the wagons, overseeing the work.
Leaving so soon, Mr. Mallory?
No need to stay longer. The furs you and your cousin are sending back to St. Louis are loaded, and it's time to return for more supplies. By the time we get back here in a couple of months, you'll be ready for more supplies.
We sure will. The way the settlement is growing, you can probably have wagon trains coming and going all the time before much longer.
A lucrative arrangement for all of us, eh?
Darn right. I've got to admit, though, that I'll miss having your sister around here. A lady like that always brightens up a place.
Oh, Laura isn't going back to St. Louis with us. She's going to stay here to look after our interests.
Really? I'd heard rumors that she might stay behind, but I wasn't sure that was what you planned to do. You don't have to worry about her, Mr. Mallory. We'll see that she's well taken care of.
Laura emerged then from the cabin where she would be staying and walked toward him. Corliss's eyes followed her avidly.
Good morning. I suppose Clyde told you that he's leaving today, Mr. Hart?
He certainly did. He also told me that you'll be staying here with us while he returns to St. Louis. Let me assure you, Miss Mallory, we'll do everything we can to make your stay here pleasant and safe.
I never doubted that. Are the wagons almost ready, Clyde?
We'll be leaving within the hour.
I'll miss you. But don't worry about me. I'm sure I'll be fine.
And I'm sure that I'll be back before you know it.
I'd better get back to the trading post. Good luck on your journey, Mr. Mallory.
Thank you, sir. Lecherous fool. You be sure and keep your distance from him, Laura. And don't let yourself be caught alone with him.
Stop being the protective brother, Clyde. You know perfectly well that I'm just as capable of taking care of myself as you are.
Yes, perhaps, but still, I'll be glad when all this is over.
So will I. I don't look forward to the bloodshed. There are quite a few women and children here.
I know what you mean. Certain losses are inevitable, though. I'm glad that preacher fellow isn't here. It's difficult to fight side by side with a man and then betray him. I rather liked him, despite the fact that he's an American.
So did I. There's something about him. But we're here to carry out an assignment, and we cannot let anything deter us from it.
We won't. If all goes as planned, before the day is over, those rifles will be in the hands of the Blackfoot, and in the end, the blood will be on their hands.
True to Mallory's prediction, the wagon train pulled out of the settlement less than an hour later. Mallory felt better once the settlement was out of sight. He had known when he came here that the plan devised by Lord Aspermont included arming the savages and stirring them to attack the settlement. Once this American foothold in the wilderness was wiped out, Lord Aspermont was certain they would abandon their plans to settle this vast territory. Then, British settlers could come down from Canada and establish their own trading post and community. By the time the Americans came back again, this would be de facto British territory. New boundary lines could be negotiated then. The Americans would have no choice except to concede part of the territory that they had acquired from France in the Louisiana Purchase.
And their damnable, greedy, grasping, overreaching will be blunted at last. There is room for only one empire in the world, and that is the British Empire.
Mallory didn't know exactly where Ezra Flagg and the Blackfoot chief Walks Like a Bear would rendezvous with the wagons. Somewhere east of the settlement, well away from it, Flagg had said. His instructions had been for Mallory to take the wagons east as if he were really heading back to St. Louis, and they would be met. Mallory didn't trust Flagg as far as he could throw the man. Anyone who would betray his own countrymen for money would certainly betray a foreign agent for more money. But Mallory had taken precautions to see that that didn't happen. Without going into detail, he had warned Flagg not to double-cross him. Flagg had denied that he would ever do such a thing, of course. But his word meant nothing to Mallory. Mallory rode alongside the lead wagon. A man named Vincent handled the reins. Like all the other drivers and workers who had accompanied the wagon train west from St. Louis, they had been well paid to follow orders and keep their mouths shut. They had to know that something underhanded was going on. They didn't care as long as they got their money. Mallory held up a hand and a signal for the wagons to halt as he spotted two riders descending a ridge. Mallory recognized Ezra Flagg, even at a distance. The telltale eagle feathers fluttered at the end of Flagg's rifle barrel. The man with Flagg sported feathers too, but they were tied in his hair. A small shiver went through Mallory as the riders drew closer, and he was able to make out the ruthless cast of the second man's copper-hued face. Mallory had seen a few Injuns in St. Louis, but they had been what the Americans called friendlies.
That's a redskin coming, boss. Where there's one of those devils, there's likely to be more.
I'm well aware of that. Your job is to drive the wagon, Vincent, not to offer advice.
Maybe so, but I'll be damned if I'm gonna sit by and let some painted, feather-wearing bastard take my scalp.
For God's sake, there's not going to be any scalping! We're here to do business with the Indians, not to fight them.
Those rifles hid in the false bottoms of the wagons. You're gonna sell them to the Redskins?
Do you have any objections to that?
As long as I get my money, mister, you can sell anything you want to anybody you want.
Yeah, you'll get paid, have no fear of that. But as a point of accuracy, we're not selling those weapons to the Indians. We're going to give them away.
Flagg and Walks Like a Bear were only about 50 yards away now. Mallory composed his thoughts and kept his expression carefully neutral as the two men approached and drew rein to halt their horses. Mallory walked his horse forward to greet him.
Howdy, Mallory. Looks like you didn't have any trouble getting away from the settlement.
Of course not. Everybody accepted my story that the wagons were returning to St. Louis for more supplies.
This is Walks Like a Bear, war chief of the Blackfoot.
Does he speak English?
Not a damn lick. He hates white men so bad he won't have nothing to do with them, including learning their lingo. I figure he'd like to kill you right now, just because you're white.
He seems to tolerate you without any difficulty.
Well, that's because I'm helping him get something he wants.
I thought perhaps your wife was one of his people.
Nope, she's Crow, and she ain't my wife, I told you. The Crow hate me because I stole her, and that's another reason Bear here puts up with me. The Blackfoot and the Crow been fighting and killing each other for years, and the Crow, being my enemies, makes old Bear like me a mite better, or hate me a mite less, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yes, that's all very interesting, but let's get on with it, shall we? I take that the chief knows about the rifles?
I told him all about him. He can't wait for him and his bucks to get their hands on him.
Mallory turned in the saddle and looked at his men.
Open those false bottoms and get the rifles out!
Clyde turned back to Flagg and the Blackfoot.
I'm surprised the chief doesn't have his men with him.
Oh, they're here. You can't see them, but they're up there in that timber. Bear don't trust you. You try to trick him or double-cross him, and you'll see his men fast enough. They'll be the last thing you see.
There'll be no tricks or double-crosses on either side.
I got no reason to cross you, Mallory. And these Redskins? Well, they'll kill you straight out, or they'll torture you for a few days if they're in the mood to, but they won't lie to you.
Vincent and Mallory's other men unloaded the wagons, using iron bars to pry up the false bottoms in the vehicles, and then wrestling out the crates containing the new flintlocks. Mallory dismounted and took a rifle from one of the crates when Vincent had wrenched the lid off. He carried the weapon over to Flagg and Walks Like a Bear and held it up to the war chief. The Blackfoot took the rifle and studied it for a minute or so. Flagg leaned over in the saddle to take a closer look.
Wait just a damn minute. That gun's got no flint. It won't fire.
Of course not. I'm not going to turn over functioning weapons to a bunch of savages. The flints have been removed from all of them.
The flints was part of the deal, Mallory.
Don't worry, we have the flints. But it will take some time to make the rifles workable. That will give my men a chance to get away before the savages can decide to try out the weapons on them.
Oh, goddamn, they weren't gonna do that.
Well, now they won't have to resist the temptation.
You said something about your men getting away. What about you?
Oh, I'm not going anywhere. Vincent and the other men will return to St. Louis with the wagons, but I'm staying here.
Here? Where?
With you and the chief. I'm going to be there when those damned American upstarts learn to their everlasting regret that they never should have come out here in the first place.
Preacher found beavers and several of his traps. so by the next day after the gang of would-be killers had left the valley, he had a good start on another load of plues. He was glad that Fairfax and the rest of his men were gone, but doubt still plagued Preacher a little. Preacher noticed that Horse was looking in the same direction as Dog. He knew the animal smelled something that he couldn't, and they didn't like it.
All right, Dog, go see what it is. Stay, Horse.
Preacher followed Dog, moving at a more deliberate pace. His eyes moved constantly as he threaded his way through the trees. He broke out of the trees in a small clearing at the foot of a bluff. Somebody else occupied the clearing. An Injun, Crow, by the looks of the decorations on his buckskins, had his back pressed against the bluff's granite face. He had a tomahawk gripped in one hand, and he waved the weapon back and forth in front of him as if he were trying to fend off the big dog. Preacher saw that the Injun was hurt. His shoulders were hunched over like he was in pain, and the tomahawk's movements were slow and feeble. His left arm was pressed against his belly. Blood dripped onto the ground at his moccasin feet.
Don't come any closer, or I'll kill your devil wolf.
He's not a wolf. He's just a dog. And I mean you no harm, friend.
Who are you?
Some call me Preacher.
Some call you Crow Killer.
Yeah, well, I've been called a lot of things. Point is, I don't have any reason to kill you. I'd like to help you.
You cannot help me. The hated Blackfoot have stolen my life and the lives of my friends.
Where are the others?
All dead. Their bodies lie. I do not know. Somewhere not far. I no longer know where I am. Stay back! I will kill...
Carefully, Preacher rolled the wounded man onto his back. He lifted the buckskin shirt and saw the arrow shaft protruding a couple of inches from the man's belly. He hadn't been able to see it before because of the way the man had kept his arm pressed to his midsection. The arrowhead was buried deep in the man's gut. Either he had snapped off the rest of the shaft himself, or he'd fallen and broken it off that way. Didn't really matter. The fellow was as good as dead. Nobody recovered from a belly wound like that.
If you would help me end my suffering.
Yeah, you bet. First, what happened to you and your friends?
We were hunting. A party of Blackfoot attacked us.
War party?
They were painted for war. You said you would help me.
Yeah, friend. I did. I wish you a peaceful journey.
As Preacher straightened, he glanced up through the trees at the sky and judged the amount of light remaining. Even going back to fetch Horse right now and riding as hard as he could, it would probably be dark before he could reach the settlement. He had to warn him of the danger from the war party.
Come on, Dog.
It would have been all right with Colin Fairfax if he never had to spend another night alone in this wilderness. Terrors he had experienced during his long trek back to St. Louis the year before had come back to him with the fall of darkness. Even though the situation was much different, he did have a horse now and was well armed with plenty of provisions. As night closed in, he had felt again like the cold, starving, miserable wretch he had been for long weeks during the journey. Unwilling to build a fire since he didn't want to give away his continued presence in the valley, he sat in the dark, eyes wide with fear, hands clutching his rifle, until exhaustion finally claimed him. His sleep was far from restful, but even so he felt much better once the sun was up the next morning. He had set off toward the trading post again. In the light of day, he was able to think about his plan rather than the nameless horrors that lurked in the night. He had reached the vicinity of the settlement around midday and positioned himself atop a small wooded knoll where he could keep an eye on the place. He had a spyglass in his pack, but he used it sparingly because he didn't want anyone to notice the sun reflecting off the lens. Even without it, he could see that the wagons that had been at the trading post a couple of days earlier were gone now. He hadn't seen the wagon himself. He hadn't seen the wagons himself, but some of his scouts had reported they were there. Fairfax was glad the wagon train had departed. He did not need any extra people around the trading post when he kidnapped Deborah Hart. He could see through the open gates from where he was, and he spotted Deborah a couple of times during the afternoon. Training the spyglass on her momentarily, he saw that she was as lovely as ever. Her stomach was definitely rounded, though. Fairfax frowned as he thought about that. If Deborah was with child, that might complicate things. On the other hand, her condition might mean the Preacher would be that much more desperate to rescue her. Maybe that urgency would make the mountain man reckless. As the sun lowered toward the mountains, Fairfax made up his mind. He would go to the trading post this evening. He could ride in through the gates at dusk, just before the guards closed them. Chances are no one would recognize him except the Harts and Deborah. He was dressed like a fur trapper now, in buckskins and a coonskin cap he had gotten from Campbell when he gave the man his beaver hat to wear on the way out of the valley. No one would pay much attention to him. Once inside, he would avoid the trading post itself until he had a chance to scout out the situation. Once it was good and dark, he would get into the building somehow, kill Corliss and Jerome Hart. Getting his revenge on the cousins would be quite satisfying. Then, he would take Deborah and vanish into the night. He wasn't worried about Preacher being able to follow him. The mountain man had demonstrated an uncanny ability to follow a trail. This time, however, the trail would lead Preacher to his death. A smile of anticipation crawled across Fairfax's lips. Finally, the sun slipped below the mountains to the west. Though the sky remained rosy, shadows began to gather quickly in the valley. It was time, Fairfax thought to himself. He mounted up and rode toward the settlement, confident that before this night was over, he would be well on his way to accomplishing his goal.
This is as far as I go, Mallory. The settlement's not more than a quarter of a mile from here.
You're not going to take part in the attack?
There's only so much I'll do for money, mister. Slaughtering women and kids ain't part of it.
I'm sorry, but you have to accompany me. I don't speak the chief's tongue, and I may need to communicate with him. If you don't choose to take part in the actual attack, that's your business, but I still have need of you.
I ain't used to being talked to like that. We had a deal, but it didn't include you giving me orders.
It's just that I have to reach my sister and make sure that she's safe. I'm afraid that in their, bloodlust, the savages may harm her.
I can explain all that to the chief.
But he won't be there beside every one of his men during the entire battle. I need someone who can make himself understood to go with me while I find Laura and make sure she's safe. Surely you can see that.
Oh, all right, damn it. I'll come with you. But I'm staying out of the fight if I can.
Fair enough. Is the chief ready?
Flag turned to walk like a bear. The chief clenched his right hand into a fist and thumped it hard against his chest.
Well then, gentlemen, shall we go?
Laura looked out the door of her cabin at the lights in the trading post. Wished for a moment that she could go over there. The cabin was as nicely furnished as it could be in this wilderness, but it was still a squalid hovel compared to the house in London where she'd lived as a child. That was before the death of her parents, of course. After their mother had passed away, she and Clyde had been shuffled about between various relatives, and often they'd been treated more like servants than members of the family. The resentment Laura had felt at that treatment had festered within her, growing into the hatred she directed at the Americans for taking her father away from her and starting the chain of events that had ruined her life. But as bad as things had been back then, she'd still always had people around her. She hadn't experienced the sort of isolation she felt here. Of course, there were people here too, but not the sort whose presence gave Laura any confidence. They were oafish American louts, and she despised them all. So even though she longed for lights and sounds and human company, she closed the cabin door and stayed where she was.
If I did go over to the trading post, I would have to endure the lecherous stares of Corliss Hart and those annoying, nervous mannerisms of his cousin Jerome, the unbearable, simpering sweetness of Deborah Hart, and the insufferable stupidity of that boy Jake. Better to stay here. And come the morning, they will all be dead.
Laura walked over to the table and picked up one of the pistols that lay before her. They were loaded and primed, but not cocked. Clyde had assured her that he would keep the savages away from her cabin, but sometimes things happened that were beyond anyone's control. If she had to, if any of the Indians burst in here intent on harming her, she wouldn't hesitate to shoot him, or anyone else who threatened her. A short time earlier, as dusk was just settling in, Colin Fairfax had ridden in through the gates in the sturdy stockade fence around the trading post. The coonskin cap was pulled down tightly on his head, concealing the fact that he was mostly bald. As long as he avoided the Harts, no one would suspect that he was up to no good. One of the guards at the gate stepped in front of Fairfax.
Howdy, mister. New hereabouts, ain't you?
Yes, that's right. Just got here.
Well, welcome to... we gotta give this place a name. Anyway, welcome, mister. If you're looking for a drink, the Hart's got the best whiskey in these parts.
Much obliged.
Fairfax tied his horse at the very end of the hitch rack, as far away from the trading post door as he could. Then he stepped up into the shadows at the end of the porch and pressed his back against the rough log wall of the building. The trading post had no windows, but there were chinks between the logs and rifle ports. Fairfax found a tiny opening and pressed an eye to it. From this angle, he couldn't see much, only some shelves where pelts that the Harts had taken in on trade were stacked. Fairfax grimaced and stole along the wall, looking for another chink. He hoped no one saw him lurking. The second opening he found afforded him a better view, even though it was a lower, narrower. Fairfax hunkered down. He could see all the way to the rear of the trading post where Corliss and Jerome Hart moved around behind the counter. They came in and out of Fairfax's sight several times as he watched. He didn't see Deborah, but surely she was in here. Fairfax settled in. He sat there in the shadows, thinking. Darkness deepened. Soon enough, there were few people left moving around the trading post. Fairfax stood up, thinking that the time had come to try to get in there somehow and find Deborah. He cocked an ear. Anyone riding that fast in the night usually carried trouble with him. Fairfax caught his breath as a horrible thought occurred to him. He didn't know why. He didn't know how.
That goddamn creature...
Preacher had made many a fast ride in his life, but few had been faster or more urgent than the one he made this night. Dog ran after Preacher and horse, falling behind, but stubbornly staying on their trail. If nothing happened to slow him down, Preacher and horse would reach the settlement before the big dog did. Dog wouldn't be very far behind. Finally, Preacher entered the valley that led to the trading post. Snow-capped mountains loomed on his right, starlight glittering on the snow that stayed there all year round. Blackfoot War Party had to be ahead of him somewhere, between him and the settlement. He veered as close to the foothills as he could in hopes that he could get past them before they knew he was anywhere around. It was inevitable that they would hear the rolling thunder of horses' hoofbeats, though. The Preacher wasn't surprised a few minutes later when several riders galloped out of the darkness toward him.
Give it all you got, big fella!
The engines couldn't resist the thrill of the chase. angling sharply across the valley floor, they moved to intercept the creature. They underestimated Horse's speed, though, even after the hard run the stallion had already made. Reaching deep down inside, Horse found the strength to surge ahead and sweep past the Blackfoot. Suddenly, a large, thickly furred shape came flying out of the darkness and slammed into one of the engines astride his horse. Dog whirled away from the man he had just mauled. One of the Blackfoot tried to skewer him with a lance, but the big cur twisted out of danger. He darted in and hamstrung one of the ponies. The pony threw its rider. Dog was on him in a flash. Kerr was buying time for Preacher. Buying time for everyone at that settlement, in fact. The Preacher hoped that his old friend got away from the Blackfoot safely. Preacher and the horse raced on, the stallion giving everything he had. The valley's grassy floor swept by under Horse's flashing hooves. Preacher saw the yellow glow of lights up ahead, along with a dark shape that he knew to be the stockade wall. He was only 100 yards from the closest outlying cabin when he used his left hand to pull out one of the pistols from behind his belt.
Injuns! Injuns! Everybody into the stockade!
Preacher didn't know how far behind him the main body of the war party was, but they had to be pretty damn close. The settlers had only minutes to get to safety inside the stockade. From the corner of his eye, he saw a man rush out of the first cabin as Horse flashed past him. The man had a flintlock in one hand and was using the other to pull up his suspenders.
Engine! Head for the stockade!
Men grabbed their wives and kids and hustled them through the night toward the trading post. Preacher's eyes searched the darkness for any sign of the war party. They were closing in. It was only a matter of minutes now. Meanwhile, Colin Fairfax huddled in the shadows next to the trading post wall. That familiar voice had confirmed his worst suspicions. The Preacher had somehow come out of nowhere to threaten his plans yet again. Now there was no way he could get into the trading post to kidnap Deborah Hart. Instead, it was going to require some luck just to live through the engine attack and not be recognized by any of the people here who knew him. His men began to run toward the ladders leading to the parapet. Fairfax leaped down from the porch and hurried to join him. He wanted to keep his face turned away from the trading post itself. Of course, that meant he would have to help fight off the engines, and he would be risking his life doing that. But if he could just survive tonight's battle and slip away, perhaps he'd have another chance later to even the score with Preacher. Torches placed along the top of the wall flared up as Fairfax slung his flintlock over his shoulder and ascended the nearest ladder. When Fairfax reached the top, he hurried to a spot halfway between two of the torches where their light wasn't quite so bright.
Hey, what do you reckon happened out there, friend?
Sounds like someone's warning that an Indian attack's coming.
I figured there'd be some trouble with the Redskins sooner or later. I knew that when I came out here, but it's different somehow. You think you know what it's going to be like, but you don't. You don't ever know until it's rushing straight at you.
The gates had been opened and people hurried in, most of them either half-dressed or clad in night clothes. Pale-faced men shepherded along half-hysterical women clutching infants. Suddenly, the sight of a buckskin-clad man on a horse caught Fairfax's eye. Man and horse were at the very edge of the light cast by the torches, but with a shock of hate that went all the way through him, Fairfax recognized him.
Preacher.
He jerked his flintlock to his shoulder.
Look, there's one of the engines close in.
Fairfax settled his sights on Preacher. A surge of instinctive fear went through Laura Mallory. She had already blown out the lamp. Now she stood in darkness, both pistols clutched in her hands. The weapons were loaded, primed, and now cocked as well. Something puzzled her, though. Just before the violence broke out, she would have sworn that she heard Preacher's voice shouting somewhere nearby. But that was impossible. He'd left the settlement a couple of days earlier to return to the mountains and his traps. He should have been gone for a week, probably longer.
Why would he have returned so soon? Tonight of all nights.
Laura couldn't stand it any longer. She had to see what was going on. She went to the front window, unbarred the shutters, and opened one of them a few inches so she could peer out into the night. Laura caught a glimpse of figures rushing past on horseback and men on foot running for their lives. She she became aware of a shifting reddish light coming from the direction of the trading post. Was the place on fire already? She leaned forward to check, but she couldn't see the trading post from this angle. Torn by indecision, after a moment, she rushed to the door, set the bar aside, and opened it. If the trading post burned down, and even if all the Americans weren't killed, surely the survivors would abandon the settlement. Bar stepped outside and turned toward the stockade. A twinge of disappointment went through her as she saw that the light came from torches set along the walls. The buildings inside weren't ablaze at all. Laura's eyes widened in horror as she saw one of the engines mounted on a swift pony charging straight for her. She thrust both of the pistols toward the engine. Clyde Mallory had no idea who the Lone Rider could be, but when the man came up behind the war party and then tried to sweep past, Flag and walked like a bear, taking quick action to deal with the problem, sending a small group of warriors to intercept and kill him. Unfortunately, things hadn't quite worked out that way. The man had gotten past him, and he raced ahead to the settlement. His mount obviously possessed a great deal of speed.
It's Preacher! Kill him! Kill them all!
Mallory hung back and watched the fight. He didn't want to get close enough to be spotted and recognized, just in case any of the settlers survived. Ezra Flagg was with him, and when Mallory glanced over at the man, he saw that Flagg's expression was taut and grim.
Having second thoughts, old boy?
I took your money. I don't back out on a deal. I don't have much stomach for killing women and kids, though.
You mean you don't have much stomach for observing it? You knew what would happen when you agreed to help me arm the savages.
Yeah, I reckon a deal is a deal. Hadn't we better go see about your sister?
Indeed, that's a splendid suggestion.
Mallory urged his horse into motion, heading for the cabin that Laura occupied. He had selected it specifically with tonight's raid in mind. It was on the eastern edge of the settlement, farthest away from the trading post. Mallory thought he and Flagg could reach it without any of the settlers seen. Mallory and Flagg circled the fight, which had become fierce. Some of the settlers rallied and tried to mount a defense around the cabins rather than making for the trading post. But as Mallory rode toward his sister's small cabin, sheer terror suddenly struck his heart. One of the Blackfoot warriors, caught up in the bloodlust of battle, rode his pony straight toward the tall, fair-haired woman who stood just outside the cabin door.
Laura! Flagg, we've got to stop that Indian!
At the same time, he lifted his rifle to his shoulder. He was a good marksman. This was the most important shot of his life. Laura's life depended on it. Preacher whirled horse to confront one of the engines charging toward him. As Preacher lowered his rifle, he had already forgotten about the man he'd just killed, because another thought had occurred to him, and it crowded everything else out of his brain. Where was Laura Mallory? Preacher urged the horse away from the stockade now, instead of toward the walls. He had to check the outlying cabins and make sure Laura hadn't been cut off or trapped. The raiders had set one of the cabins on fire. It blazed up, casting even more flickering, hellish light on the scene. Preacher raced past it, hoping that the burning cabin hadn't been Laura's. In fact, he wasn't going to allow himself to even think that. He swung the horse in a wide curve toward the cabins along the eastern edge of the settlement. As he did so, he spotted movement in front of one of the log structures. Firelight glinted on fair hair.
Let's roar!
One of the rampaging Blackfoot was bearing down on her, obviously intent on trampling her under his pony's hooves. Preacher yanked horse to a stop and grabbed one of his pistols from behind his belt. But just then, Preacher saw twin plumes of flame erupt from Laura's hand. From off on Preacher's left, another pair of muzzle flashes winked. The Blackfoot flew off his pony like he'd been slapped by the hand of God. But that still left the matter of getting Laura to safety. Preacher heeled horse into a run again, intending to sweep her up on the stallion's back as he rode past her and carry her back to the trading post as fast as he could get there. The defenders were going to have to close the gates pretty soon or risk the engines getting inside. Preacher did not want to get caught on the wrong side of those gates. That was the thought going through Preacher's mind when Fairfax fired from the stockade wall. Once again, Preacher had moved just as Colin Fairfax drew a bead on him and pulled the trigger. It was maddening the way Preacher managed to dodge death again and again, often when he wasn't even trying to, as if he had some sort of beneficent fate guiding his actions. Colin Fairfax watched as Preacher turned his horse and galloped on.
You damn fool! That weren't no engine! That was Preacher!
Are you sure? It looked like an Indian to me.
Yeah, I'm sure! But what the hell do you think you were doing? Preacher's on our side!
Sorry, I didn't know.
You had to have seen him! There was enough light! Looked to me like you were trying to kill him!
Please, listen to me! I tell you, it was an honest mistake.
That's not what it...
Fairfax quickly sheathed his knife and caught hold of the man's shirt and braced him as the man slid down the log and came to a stop and sitting position. By now, the fighting had spread all over the settlement. A cabin was on fire, and as Fairfax watched, another dwelling was put to the torch by the Redskins. He didn't see Preacher anymore. Maybe the mountain men had been killed in the fight. Fairfax wasn't going to believe that unless he saw Preacher's body, though. That seemed unlikely. In fact, it was beginning to seem unlikely that he would get out of here alive himself, unless he did it soon. The gates were still open, with riflemen trying to defend them as a few stragglers fled frantically into the stockade. But the engines were coming closer. They might soon be inside the walls. Fairfax looked over his shoulder at the trade post. The Hart cousins were now standing on the front porch holding rifles. He couldn't get in there and grab Deborah. He'd have to abandon the plan and concentrate on saving his life instead. He began to move along the parapet as if looking for a suitable target, but he was really looking for a place where the fighting wasn't as fierce. Most of the engines were on the east side of the stockade, and when Fairfax reached the southwest corner, he saw only darkness out there, no muzzle flashes, and no other defenders close by. He slung his rifle over his shoulder and grabbed hold of the tapered end of one of the upright logs that formed the wall. He drew himself up and threw a leg over. The sharpened ends were supposed to make it difficult to climb over the wall, and Fairfax had to be careful not to impale himself. But he managed to make it, awkwardly, and started climbing down the outside of the wall. Behind him, the battle continued to rage. Flames leaped high, and men killed and were killed. Fairfax didn't care about any of it. They could all wipe each other out as far as he was concerned. The only death that mattered to him was Preacher's. And if the mountain man somehow survived the bloody chaos behind Fairfax, as Fairfax fully expected him to, then he would be dealt with another day. The fleeing man disappeared into the shrouding shadow. As Preacher galloped toward her, Laura Mallory saw that she'd been right earlier when she thought she'd heard his voice. The lean, rugged mountain man was unmistakable.
Preacher!
Preacher was shot. His hat flew off his head and he toppled from the stallion. He landed in a limp sprawl, rolled over a couple of times on the ground, and came to a stop with his left arm bent under him at an awkward angle and his head covered with blood. He didn't move after that. Clearly, he'd been hit, and from the looks of it, he was either badly wounded or dead. Suddenly, a feeling of relief washed through Laura as she recognized her brother galloping towards her.
Clyde!
Clyde caught Laura up in his arms and hugged her tight.
Are you all right, Laura?
I'm not hurt at all. Just scared. What do we do now?
We're going to get you out of here.
Clyde, I saw Preacher.
I know. I saw him too, and I heard him trying to rally the settlers. That's why I had to shoot him.
You shot him?
That's right.
But why?
We couldn't afford to have him turning the tide of this battle. I've heard enough about him to know that he's capable of incredible things. He might have made a difference all by himself.
I understand. It is a shame. I rather liked him, you know.
Yet so did I. But in the end, he's just an American like all the others. Let's get you out of here before something else happens.
Clyde mounted first and then pulled her up behind him. She put her arms around his waist to hang on. At that moment, several engines raced up on their ponies. Laura stifled a scream as she saw their fierce, painted faces surrounding them.
Don't worry, darling. These are our friends. This is Chief Walks Like a Bear. You don't know Mr. Flag yet either.
Mallory, they're about to storm the stockade. You want to wait around for that?
No, I want to get Laura to safety. That's more important right now.
All right, I'll ride with you folks.
The whole group turned their horses and rode away from the cabin, which other Blackfoot dashed up to and set on fire. Laura glanced back once. She couldn't see Preacher anymore, but she knew his body lay there not far from the cap. Even though she hadn't argued it with her brother, she knew that Clyde was wrong about one thing. The preacher wasn't just like the other Americans. Searing pain was the first thing Preacher became aware of as consciousness seeped back into his brain. At first, it was overwhelming agony, but gradually it split into two. He realized that part of the pain was centered in his head, and the rest of it came from his left arm, which was doubled underneath. He managed to lift his head and open his eyes. He saw several horses trotting away. The light wasn't good, but Preacher saw fair hay. Preacher's eyesight sharpened a little, enough for him to see Laura Mallory riding on the back of a horse behind a man who looked like her brother Clyde. Preacher couldn't figure out what Clyde was doing here at the settlement when he was supposed to be on his way back to St. Louis with the wagons, but that didn't matter. What was important was that Laura and her brother were surrounded by Indians. The Blackfoot had captured him and were taking him away, no doubt intending to torture him to death. Preacher tried to push himself up, but as he put weight on his left arm, fresh agony shot through it. He collapsed. By the time he could lift his head again, Laura, Clyde Mallory, and their Indian captors were gone. Just then, a brave grabbed Preacher's long, tangled black hair and hauled up hard on it. Preacher swung his right arm up and back and drove his elbow into something yielding. At the same time, Preacher lashed out with a foot and caught the startled Indian in the belly with it. Preacher kept rolling and got his right arm under him. He levered himself up with it until he could get to his feet. Surging upward, he kicked the Indian again, this time in the jaw. Swaying as a sudden wave of dizziness hit him, Preacher managed to stay on his feet until it passed a few seconds later. His left arm hung limp and useless at his side. He lifted his right hand to his head, found a patch of sticky wetness just above his right ear. He'd been creased by rifle balls in the past, and he knew that that was what had happened to him a few minutes earlier when he was knocked out of the sack. The cabin that he supposed had been Laura Mallory's was burning now. And by the garish light of the blaze, he saw that his left arm was broken about halfway between the elbow and the wrist. It hung crooked, and he could see the lump where the broken bone was pressing up against the skin. But that would have to wait, because right now there was still a battle going on. He looked toward the stockade and saw that the gates were shut. Reloading a flintlock pistol one-handed was a right difficult chore the Preacher managed. He stayed in the shadows of the cabin as he approached the Blackfoot from behind. But they weren't looking in his direction anyway. They thought all their enemies were in front of them now. Preacher pressed his back against the cabin wall. 20 feet away, a couple of Blackfoot warriors crouched behind a wagon and fired toward the stockade. Preacher could see the rifles being used by the Indians. The weapons looked new. Preacher stepped out in the open and walked quickly toward the Indians. Preacher lunged at the other one and swung the now empty pistol.
Oh, that's two of the bastards.
By good fortune, one of them had just reloaded his rifle. Preacher picked up the long-barreled weapon. He knelt and rested the barrel on the wagon tongue. He aimed at one of the Blackfoot who was crouched at a corner of the cabin.
Three. Too damn many still to go.
But Preacher still had a loaded pistol and a belly full of rage. He braced his right hand on the wagon tongue and pushed himself to his feet. So far, the Blackfoot hadn't noticed that they were under attack from the rear. The Preacher knew that kind of luck couldn't last. He needed something to help turn the tide. He looked down at the bodies of the two Indians behind the wagon. Each of the warriors had a powder horn slung over his shoulder. The Preacher reached down and tugged them free. Each powder horn was at least half full, and his horn had even more powder in it. A taut grin pulled at the corners of his mouth. Carrying the powder horns, he turned and ran back along the path he had just followed. Bodies of several settlers lay on the ground, and most of the men had been carrying powder horns when they died. The Preacher gathered up 6 more of the horns, each of them at least half full. A couple were almost completely full of the black powder. He tore the shirt off a man who had been scalped and wrapped it around all the powder horns, using the sleeves to tie the bundle closed. Earlier, he had noticed more than a dozen members of the war party clustered behind one of the cabins. He lunged toward them now, pausing to light one of the shirt sleeves on fire as he passed the smoldering remains of a burned cabin that had collapsed. The heat coming off the debris was painful against his face, but he ignored it. With the shirt sleeve burning up closer and closer to the bundle of powder horns, Preacher broke into a run toward the largest group of Blackfoot. Preacher threw the flaming bundle as he dove forward. Preacher scrambled up and dashed past. More of the Indians ran to cut him off from the stockade. Infuriated, they didn't even try to shoot him, but rather closed in around him, obviously intended to hack him to pieces with knives and tomahawks. Preacher jerked out his remaining pistol. This one had a double-shotted load in it. That created a little gap, but it closed before Preacher could leap through it. He slammed the empty pistol into the face of the nearest Blackfoot. Preacher dropped the gun and snatched his knife from its sheath, slashing a circle around him with the razor-sharp blade. Suddenly, one of the Indians went down, a shaggy gray shape atop. The big cur spun and grabbed another man. Dog wasn't the only one coming to Preacher's aid. Horse powered through the crowd. The stallion reared up on his hind legs and lashed out with his front hoof. Preacher was aware that his loyal trail partners had shown up to help him, but he didn't have time to watch what Dog and Horse were doing. Despite the damage that Preacher, Dog, and Horse were doing, there were still too goddamn many Indians. The mountain man and his companions were bound to be pulled down and killed in a matter of seconds. But suddenly, more men were among them. Preacher caught a glimpse of Corliss Hart's face, pale and scared and resolute, as Corliss fired a pistol into the chest of a Blackfoot warrior. Jerome Hart, an unlikely battler if there ever was one, drove a rifle butt into the face of another Indian. The men who had been holed up inside the stockade had come out when they saw Preacher surrounded by the Blackfoot. He had already killed so many of the Indians that the odds were now on the side of the settlers. The battle ebbed and flowed fiercely for a couple of minutes, but then it was over. Preacher was bleeding from half a dozen knife wounds, and he was still dizzy from being grazed on the head earlier. He would have collapsed if Corliss Hart hadn't grabbed his arm to hold him up. Jerome took hold of Preacher's left arm.
Take it easy with that wing, Jerome. It's busted.
My God! I can see that now. Corliss, we need to get him inside. He looks like he may be badly hurt.
No. The Blackfoot of...
All dead. Or the next thing to it. Except for the ones who ran with their tails between their legs. They didn't expect us to come out again and bring the fight to them. Come on. We need to get you to the trading post. Deborah can patch you up.
I gotta go.
You're not going anywhere. You need medical attention. And then a lot of rest.
No time. Lord.
You mean Miss Mallory? We haven't seen her, but I'm sure she's around here somewhere.
Oh, God damn it. The Blackfoot got her. They took her off somewhere.
Good Lord. You mean she's a prisoner of those savages?
Yeah. We gotta go.
But Preacher's eyes rolled up in their sockets then, and darkness closed in around him once again. The darkness this time shot through with the red glare of flames as several of the cabins continued to burn. For the second time tonight, pain was the first thing Preacher was aware of as he regained consciousness.
Preacher's awake. Don't move, Preacher. You're badly hurt.
Deborah's pretty face swam into view above him, frowning down in concern. Corliss and Jerome leaned in, too. Preacher figured out that he was lying in a bed somewhere, probably in the living quarters in back of the trading post.
You reckon a fella could get a drink around here?
Of course. Wait just a minute.
Jerome disappeared from Preacher's sight, then came back a moment later carrying a tin cup that he handed to Deborah. She sat on the bed beside Preacher, put a hand behind his head to help him lift it, and held the cup to his lips.
Is this the same night?
That's right. You've been unconscious for a little more than an hour.
How bad am I hurt?
Your left arm is broken. It's been set and splinted, and now it's strapped down so it can't move. It's probably a good thing you were unconscious for that, Preacher.
Even out cold, we had to hold you down.
Who done the setting and splinting?
A weathered, bearded face came into Preacher's view.
I did. It weren't the first busted wing I ever set, neither. So you don't need to worry that I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, I'm much obliged.
Preacher didn't know Uncle Dan all that well, but he knew that the man had been in the mountains a long time and had been to see the elephant. Preacher trusted that he'd done a good job.
You have a head injury, too. I'm not sure what happened there. It looks like someone hit you.
No, I got creased by a rifle ball.
You mean you were shot in the head? And you're still alive?
Not really shot, just nicked a mite. It'll take more than that to hurt this old noggin of mine.
Well, from the looks of the blood all over your face, the wound bled a lot. I'm sure you're very weak from it. You also have nearly a dozen cuts on your arms and torso, and you lost blood from them, too. And your right knee is swollen. You must have wrenched it somehow.
Well, is that all?
Is that all? My God, Preacher! Those injuries are enough to keep you laid up for a month!
Not hardly. Some of those Blackfoot rode off and took Laura Mallory and her brother with them. We gotta go after them.
No offense, but you must have been seeing things. Clyde Mallory left here yesterday with his wagons. He's miles away by now, heading back to St. Louis.
It is true, however, that we haven't been able to locate Miss Mallory. But I'm sure she's around somewhere. Her body wasn't amongst those who were killed.
How many folks didn't make it?
12 men, 5 women, and 7 children. And at least a dozen more people suffered fairly serious wounds. The attack took a terrible toll on the settlement.
I'm mighty sorry I didn't get here in time to warn folks sooner.
Good Lord, Preacher, you saved our bacon, coming out of nowhere yelling and shooting like that.
He's right. We owe you a huge debt of gratitude, Preacher.
Yeah, well, some of you can repay me by going after those Blackfoot with me. We gotta rescue Laura and her brother, and there ain't no time to waste.
You're not going anywhere for at least a week. In fact, you won't even be getting out of bed for that long.
You're wrong about that.
Preacher knew damn well that in a week's time, Laura and Clyde Mallory would be dead if they weren't already. But he was enough of a realist to know that he couldn't ride out tonight. He was too weak, and if he tried, he'd probably fall off a horse and just hurt himself even worse. He had to have a little rest, and anyway, it'd be hard to track the engines at night. But come morning, he would feel better. He could pick up the trail then, and however many men he could round up to go with him would set out after those savages. The Lord God willing, they'd catch up in time to save Laura and Clyde from whatever terrible fate awaited.